the angst that I felt as a Christian with what was going on in the world was explained by kind of looking into Bitcoin, and it really answered a lot of questions. You know, we have the truth, but there's a lot of things going on in the world that we just don't quite have the knowledge to understand what's going on. And Bitcoin was able to answer those material or metaphysical questions that we all have. We have the spiritual thing covered, but we can still have some angst when we're trying to marry the metaphysical and the spiritual. And I think for me, Bitcoin has just allowed me to have a reinvigorated relationship with the Lord, for sure.
Hey everyone, it's Chris Bollinger, co-host of the Empowered Manhood podcast. This special episode is highlights from an episode that we posted back in May of 2022. The highlights will help you understand the impact of Bitcoin on the life and faith of Dr. Patrick Melder, whom show host Mike Hatch will introduce in just a minute. If you enjoy these highlights, then please listen to the entire episode. It's episode 37, An Innovative Approach to Missions Using Bitcoin, with guest Patrick Melder.
Now, a little background on Patrick. He is a trained ear, nose, and throat surgeon and sleep specialist. He trained at Walter Reed Army Medical Center and was on active duty with the U.S. Army for 13 years. He left the Army in 2006 as a lieutenant colonel and started his private practice career. Patrick did his undergraduate studies at Houston Baptist University and attended medical school at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. He was an Alpha Omega Alpha graduate. Patrick holds nearly 30 U.S. and international patents. Patrick has been involved in church ministry from positions as an elder and lay missions pastor. He is passionate about God's mission to the ends of the earth. He's been on numerous mission trips to Guatemala, Indonesia, India, and Ukraine. Patrick is also a serial entrepreneur, if you couldn't tell by all the patents that he has. He first learned about Bitcoin in 2013, but made his first purchase in 2018 and has hodled ever since. For those of you who don't know, hodled just means held onto and not sold. So he's hodled Bitcoin ever since 2018. He's written extensively about Bitcoin's truths and the impact it has on believers and non-believers. His essays can be found on Medium, TI-67 Corvette. Patrick also hosts a weekly podcast called Mission Bitcoin, where he interviews guests and discusses the intersection between Bitcoin and the Christian faith.
Patrick starts the interview by sharing his fence post story.
I guess I'll just start at the very beginning. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I grew up in a broken home in the 70s, and became a believer really from a classmate of mine in high school. I believe I was a freshman, and he was basically selling fire insurance, and I bought it. And you know, back then, the Hal Lindseys of the world were saying that he wrote a book called the Late Great Planet Earth. And so, the earth was going to hell in a handbasket just around the corner. So, I bought that fire insurance, but the Lord, knew he had to work for me. And I, developed a faith over the years, got baptized in the Nazarene church, but I guess probably the first, besides my being saved, the first major fence post for me was two guys that older than me, that were in a Church of Christ that I went to, immediately after that, just took the time. They were probably in their early to mid 30s, young family, and they just took their time to mentor me. And at that age, I was in, junior, senior high school, early college career. And when most people were in the youth group, I was kind of in the adult Bible study, trying to learn as much as I could. And they just mentored me. And that had a profound impact on me, for years and even to this day. And I guess the second major thing that really shaped my life was joining the Army. I think that I was pretty disciplined, or maybe not disciplined. I was pretty, black and white. But the Army really kind of shaped who I would later become. And I ended up spending about 13 years active duty, all told, between reserve status and active duty and being in school. I spent about 20 years associated with the military. then I got early. I got married at an early age. I graduated from college and then married my wife when I was a senior in college. And then, you know, she's been with me through medical school and all that. So we've been married for about 33 years. She's probably she's the outweighed weight fence post along the whole trail. I mean, it's, yeah. She's the cement post. definitely my better half. And I think that another major, I have two more fence posts for you. I think probably three, but another major fence post would be when I was in the early 2000s, I was the lay missions pastor of a Bible church in Maryland. Hmm. And a little bit prior to me assuming that role, I was involved in essentially what was a CLC at a local level. This is at Durwood Bible Church in Maryland. And the pastor, Steve Pettit, had a group called, he created a group called Joshua's Men, and he created this curriculum all his own. We had books that we would read. And if I remember correctly, it was a year-long course. We met every week on a Saturday, and it was a very similar format to CLC. So when CLC came along a little bit later, you know, about 10 years later, I was very familiar with the concept and really grew out of that experience and wanted to be re-engaged with that experience. And so when we moved down here to Georgia and then started attending North Metro and they were starting the CLC program, I was very keen to kind of get plugged back into that. So that was nice. That was great. And then I think probably the last fence post we'll talk about, which will be a good segue into what we're doing, is my interaction with Bitcoin and not a person, not a thing, but a movement, a revolution. it's been truly been transformative. And I think that hopefully we'll get into this in the discussion, but yeah. I think that some of the angst that I felt as a Christian with what was going on in the world was explained by kind of looking into Bitcoin, and it really answered a lot of questions. You know, we have the truth, but there's a lot of things going on in the world that we just don't quite have the knowledge to understand what's going on. And Bitcoin was able to answer those material or metaphysical questions that we all have. We have the spiritual thing covered, but we can still have some angst when we're trying to marry the metaphysical and the spiritual. And I think for me, Bitcoin has just allowed me to have a reinvigorated relationship with the Lord for sure.
So you wrote the book, The Christian Case for Bitcoin. Let me ask you this, because I think this is, I feel like a good metaphor. Maybe I think of an Amos when God is holding that plumb line, you know, and he says, and I found you Israel to be wanting, you know, he's holding and using an object, a technology that humans created that happens to reveal the crookedness of the world. And I think I thought of Bitcoin very similar to that, as this technology that reflects or puts a mirror up to the corruption that's going on in the world. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And that's familiar with Amos, but that I've not used that in my correlation with Bitcoin. I think that's an excellent analogy. And I draw though that similar analogy within the book. I didn't use Amos as an example, but that's exactly what Bitcoin is. I mean, Bitcoin is the truth that, you know, it's an overused metaphor, but the orange pill, the red pill, green pill in the Matrix, you know, Bitcoin being the orange pill. Once you go down what we call in the Bitcoin circles, the rabbit hole of understanding what Bitcoin is, you see the standard of truth within Bitcoin. You can't manipulate it. And then when you start seeing the standard of truth that can't be manipulated, then you start asking yourself questions about, wait a minute, what about all this other stuff that's going on that can be manipulated, like our monetary system? And then that leads you down all these other roads of what's been influenced by what we call the fiat mindset. Or I make this case in the Christian Case for Bitcoin. I mean, really, no one has the authority to create from nothing except God alone. And the state has taken that authority and usurped God's ability or authority in creating something from nothing, and that's money.
Now, before Bitcoin and your project in Guatemala, the book, you were involved in some missionary work as an ENT, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So when I finished my training, I trained in the Army. I spent 13 years active duty, but I trained at Walter Reed Army Medical Center, the old one, not the new one that's now in Bethesda, Maryland, but the one that's in DC. And when I finished my training, I decided that I wanted to use my medical skills on the mission field. And I didn't know what that was going to look like. And I took my first step in being a part of a mission trip from YWAM, Youth with the Mission. And that was in 99. And I didn't know anybody on the team. We all met in Minneapolis and flew from there to Amsterdam and then India. We spent 3 weeks in India. And I spent my time working with a Hindu ENT surgeon. And I was just it was relational ministry, relational evangelism. And we did that for 3 weeks. And when I got back, it was around that time that I did the CLC program, the Joshua's Men program, at the church, the Bible church. And then shortly thereafter, I became the lay missions pastor for the church and eventually went on 3 or 4 mission trips to India and sent many trips from my church out to other parts of the world. Learned a lot about missions, took a really influential course. Well, I was going to take the course called Perspectives, which is a really significant missions indoctrination about why missions is so important. And that really lit the fire in me about why missions is so important for God's kingdom, because God is a missionary God. And when I then subsequently went to Ukraine I think 2006. And then as my girls are getting older, they needed I always needed to be home. But at that point, my wife was like, okay, Patrick, need to be home with us and the girls. And so I didn't go on a missions activity for quite some time. But then when they got older, like in middle school, high school, I decided that I wanted to impart that sense of service and mission to my girls as my wife did too. And in fact, this next phase of our mission walk was not because of me. It was because of my wife. We were at North Metro where I did CLC. And we had a couple that was sent out from the church to Guatemala. They were up speaking one Sunday afternoon. And my wife went up to Angel, who was the wife of Lee, the Radfords. And they were doing work down in Guatemala. And my wife was really interested. And she said, we'd love to come down and see you guys in Guatemala. And later on, we realized that Angel had heard that a lot. And a lot of times, you know, people just never follow up. Yeah. Well, we followed up. And then for 6 years, from 2012 to 2018, we took our girls as a family mission trip down to Guatemala every summer. And we did an art camp for the school that we're now doing the Bitcoin mission stuff with. I had heard of Bitcoin first in 2013 and completely dismissed it. Like most, a lot of Bitcoiners have regret stories. And so but in 2018, we were in Puerto Vallarta and just vacationing. And I started kind of researching a little bit. And as I started researching Bitcoin in particular, I understood immediately the impact that the underlying technology, the blockchain technology, what it would have in a developing country. Because once you put something, for those who don't know, once you put something on the Bitcoin blockchain in particular, it's immutable. You can't change it. And I thought, wow, I mean, in a developing country, in times of civil strife or civil war, you know, property rights are just forgotten and land seized and taken away. But if you've got something on a blockchain, then that person could have rights to that property, you know, forever. And I bought my first Bitcoin then. Again, because I was a busy physician and entrepreneur, didn't really have a lot of time to really go down all the rabbit holes. But that's when I first bought Bitcoin and really just bought it. And what we call dollar cost averaged. I didn't know what that term meant at the time, but it's big within the Bitcoin community of just buying. I mean, I think everybody knows what it means, but I didn't realize that's what I was doing with Bitcoin. I just bought a little bit at a time. And the church does a lot of good things. Okay. We go and build churches. We go and dig water wells, build clinics, schools, we evangelize. But one thing that is always difficult to do is to provide economic opportunity without creating dependence. Whenever you give people money, yeah, and it's not, it has nothing to do with who you're ministering to. It's human nature. Once you give people money, you create a dependent situation. And the worst thing you want to do as a church and as a witness is create that situation. Because if you're giving money to someone in a country, let's just say it's Guatemala, and they're associating you with the Christian mission, and they come to you multiple times because they need the money, or a family member or everybody in the community knows that they can come to you for money or whatever, the moment you say no, that immediately affects your Christian witness. So creating dependence is a very bad thing on the mission field. When I started learning about Bitcoin, what it could do, the empowerment that it could provide, the economic freedom that it could provide, I started thinking, wow, I would love to take this technology, and that's what it is. It's a technology. It's not just a money. I would love to take this technology down to Guatemala in the community that we served and help transform that society and that community. And that's kind of that was the synthesis, or that was the joining of Bitcoin and Guatemala, was my Bitcoin knowledge becoming a lever of power and freedom, and the work in missions where, you know, we could now as Christians provide that other piece of the pie that we just can't provide now without dependence. And let me be clear, being blessed by the Lord does not mean you're going to get wealth. Okay. The Lord made it very clear. We will always have the poor among us. But the other kind of thing that I started reading, and I make it pretty evident in my book, is that the morality of our economic system is so bad, and it affects so many people, that we are a party to this economic system because we participate in it. We don't say anything about it. And it has a negative trickle down effect in people in developing countries.
And I love the other point you make, and you say that it's not that Satan just influences us and others to his bidding, but we are inside his machinery, working as hard as we can to resist, but not realizing where we are. And that machinery is this monetary system that we're caught inside, that Satan is using and manipulating us through, but we're blind to.
I think if there's one thing that sentence or portion of this broadcast or podcast that people should key on, is that, because you as a pastor, as a leader in the church, you know, you're always trying to get people to do more, you know, spend more time praying, reading, spend more time at the church, and spend more time engaging with fellow believers. We have that desire within us, but wait a minute, I've got to pay my bills. I've got to get my kids to sports or whatever. Sometimes I'm working two jobs, three jobs or whatever. And we're doing that because our lives are being inflated away, and we don't realize what's going on. And so if our lives are being inflated away, that means we're spending less and less time with each other and with the Lord. Imagine what would happen if our lives are being deflated. We're getting our time back. And that's what Bitcoin does. And we can get into that. But Bitcoin allows us to slow down, because the rate of compounded annual increase in the price of Bitcoin allows me to save my time and do what I love to do. And that's the trap that we don't realize that we're in. And Bitcoin right now is that lifeboat that we can look to.
Let's talk about what exactly you're doing now in Guatemala with Bitcoin and how it's impacting the community.
Great. So what we're doing in Guatemala, in Panajachel, Lake Atitlan, which is pictured behind me. And by the way, for those who aren't familiar with Bitcoin memeology, the G, the logo, is a Quetzal. And you might notice that he's got a little laser eye. That's a Bitcoin meme. Yes. So it's not that's an evil Quetzal. It's a Bitcoin meme. Anyway, so what we're
doing. That's good clarification.
So what we're doing in Panajachel is we're basically bringing the technology of Bitcoin by providing education first. So we're working at the same school, Centro Educativo Josue in Panajachel, and we're teaching the kids about Bitcoin. And the reason we're doing that is we're basing what we're doing on what was done in El Zante in El Salvador at Bitcoin Beach. What they did when they first tried to introduce Bitcoin about 3 or 4 years ago into the community, they found that the adults just weren't picking it up very well because it's a new technology and it's a new money, and they were very suspicious of it. So what they shifted focus and wanted to start teaching children. So we're following that model. So we started teaching children. In addition to that, we are actually bringing the technology, not just the money, but the technology down to Panajachel. We've set up what's called a full Bitcoin node at the school, the first that I'm aware of at a school in Central America. We set up a miner, a Bitcoin miner at the school and at the municipality, the first Bitcoin miner in a municipality in the Americas. We're bootstrapping this. You know, I've gone down there and on my own dime. We don't have any funds to support this. So we wanted to introduce Bitcoin mining to kind of inject Bitcoin into the community. And part of that process of the Bitcoin mining is while the lake is beautiful, it's slowly dying, similar to what happened with Lake Tahoe in the 80s and 90s. You know, the lake itself sits at about 5,000 feet, and the mountains around it are reaching upwards of about 8,000 feet above sea level. And there are a bunch of tiny farms and villages around the lake. And just like any developing country, there's poor wastewater management. The farming residue and the chemicals drain down into the lake. And so and there have been many attempts to try to clean the lake, but they've all failed. And what we can do with Bitcoin mining is provide an economic incentive with the Bitcoin mining to actually clean the lake.
You're taking that entrepreneurial spirit, the things that you learned, and you're combining it with missions and finding innovative ways to serve the community down there and have a redemptive influence, reflect Christ, glorify God. I love that, man. Oh my goodness. It just makes my heart swell to think about how you're doing these things down there. So praise God for that.
And I tell everybody, you know, this is not an evangelical effort here, but wink, wink, if you want me to talk to you about Jesus, I'm happy to do it. So and they've all heard me say that, you know. And then on and I'm not ashamed about it. You know, what's really freeing about the Bitcoin community is it's very accepting. You know, you could come up with the craziest ideas and talk about it. And Bitcoiners are, unless it's against Bitcoin, they're very open to it. And so I feel totally open talking about my faith with Bitcoiners. And, you know, they know that we have a common bond within Bitcoin, and that allows us to have a unifying talk. And that's why I wrote my second book, which maybe we can touch on. But yeah. On one of the last nights we were there, I had a reporter that was with us, and he spent the whole time down there. He's going to do an article on what we're doing. And so he was interviewing me, and he was asking about my intersection of faith and the fact that I baptized somebody down in Miami after the Thank God for Bitcoin conference.
Which I got to be there for and witness, yeah, by the way. That was amazing.
Yeah. So this Bitcoiner and his girlfriend, both Bitcoiners from Colombia, they're Swiss, but they were in Colombia at the time. They're just sitting there listening to me tell the story. And I basically told the entire gospel story while they were listening. So it was awesome. That's, you know, great. And yes. then the reporter said, well, you know, I mean, we could talk about other things. You know, we've got other company here. And this new Bitcoiner friend of mine from Colombia said, no, it's okay. We can talk about this. So it was just like, wow. I mean, when would we have an opportunity to do something like that? You know, and it was just fantastic. Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah. You say you're not evangelical, but I don't care what you do. If you're a Christian.
Yeah, that's right.
Evangelism goes with you wherever you go.
That's right.
Like, I don't care.
Right.
And the projects, it's all inherent. That redemptive nature is all inherent in what you do. Yeah. So, man, that's beautiful. So, okay. So connect the dots real quick for us in terms of how this Bitcoin mining is going to help clean the lake.
Okay. I'll give you just one succinct example, and there are many. Okay. All right. In Panajachel, there's a wastewater treatment facility, and I've never stepped foot inside of a wastewater treatment facility in my life until in January. So there's a wastewater treatment facility down there that has a giant, what we call a biodigester. And if you're not familiar with what a biodigester is, you take organic material, you let it decompose, and at a certain level, you can take it out and it becomes compost or fertilizer or whatever. Well, all organic material, not just from the wastewater treatment facility, but all organic material, when it decomposes, releases methane. Mm-hmm. Methane is a gas that is 2 to 3 times more harmful to the environment than CO2. In the U.S., like if you've driven by, like not too far from where I am, we have a large waste management landfill for the city that I live in, and you'll see these pipes coming up out of the ground. And in modern waste management, you create basically what's called a sterile tomb or a vault where all the material has to go into, and you line it so it can't leak into the groundwater. But it produces methane. And so they have this biodigester. It's got methane that it's producing. They have a flare stack. So normally they would flare methane from the stack, but the biodigester is cracked. And so the methane and the CO2 are leaking out of this digester. And so what we want to do is go down there, cap or fix the biodigester, trap the methane, flare it, but hook up a generator to it, and then mine Bitcoin. And so that would immediately solve methane leaking into the environment. It creates an economic incentive for someone to actually do something about it, because it's not being fixed right now because it's cost money and they have limited resources to begin with. So Bitcoin mining provides an economic incentive to actually fix what's wrong with the wastewater treatment facility. And that process could be replicated in the dozen plus communities around the lake and the hundreds of farms and small homes and villages around the lake as well. So there are so many aspects to Bitcoin that are definitely a tool. It is not the truth. It is a truth. It's a big truth. It's a big, big truth, but it's not the truth that we know. Mm-hmm. And I think that the other thing about, you know, Bitcoin and religion is that we have to be careful that we don't worship Bitcoin. We can't serve two gods at once, God and Mammon. And so Bitcoin has the potential to do that, but we know based on scripture that there is a difference. But it's just a tool. It's a great tool. So you can, what I would love to do, and I haven't had a lot of time to do this, but what I would love to see happen is that the church use Bitcoin as a tool for evangelism. And why I think that's important is if we look at, we live in a post-Christian world right now, and you and I and the guys that are listening to this can talk churchy language and we can understand each other. You know, we can talk about Jesus. We can talk about his death, his resurrection. We all understand what that means. We can, even when we see a cross, we know exactly what it means. But the cross is probably the most recognized symbol in the world, but most people don't place any connotation upon it. It's just a neat looking symbol. And right now, Bitcoin adoption is about 2% of the global population. If we could use Bitcoin as a tool to point to Christ, then we have 98% growth in Bitcoin to use as a tool for evangelism to point people to the real truth. And so I would love to see the church, you know, hey, we're going to have a conference on Bitcoin. Come learn about this new technology. And while you're there learning about Bitcoin, whoever's teaching it can talk about, okay, we're going to talk about the immutability of the Bitcoin blockchain. We're also going to just tell you that immutability is not a new thing. You know, we've had that in the church, and we have open source technology called the canon that's been in the church, you know, for almost 2000 years. So So the Bitcoin can be used to teach about the gospel.
So you've got a podcast. Are you still on Medium? Are you still writing on Medium?
I update our trips on Medium. Yeah. 67 Corvette on Medium.
Okay, great. Yeah. Where else can folks find you?
On Twitter. And strangely enough, for some reason, Bitcoiners hang out on Twitter. So you can find me on Twitter at ENT Surge, ear, nose, and throat surgeries, ENT Surge. And then at Lake Bitcoin on Twitter as well.
If you enjoyed these highlights, then check out the complete episode, An Innovative Approach to Missions Using Bitcoin, which was episode 37 of the Throwing Mountains podcast.